The FBI in Peace and War. Another great story based on Frederick L. Collins' copyrighted book, The FBI in Peace and War. Drama, thrills, action. Tonight's story, The 80 Grand Exit.
I apologize for breaking in on you this way, sir.
Well, but I left strict instructions that I was not to be...
I know, sir, but I'm afraid this can't wait.
All right, then. Say what it is fast. I'm busy. Hello?
Miss Carter, would you mind... I don't mean to be evasive, Mr. Ramsey, but in the bank's best interest, I'd better speak with you alone.
All right, Miss Carter. I'll call you in a few moments. Sit down, Albert. Sit down.
Thank you, sir.
Now, then?
It's about Earl Kelvin, sir. His wife called a short while ago, said he was sick and wouldn't be in today.
Well, is that what you wanted to see me about? Put a substitute teller in Kelvin's place, Albert, and please ask Miss Carter to step back in here.
I already put a substitute teller in his place, sir.
Hmm?
He reported a defalcation. $80,000 missing from Earl's cash drawer.
$80,000,
Mr. Ramsey. All of it in tens and twenties. That's what I wanted to see you about.
In the early part of this year, the Federal Bureau of Investigation was called in on what, at the surface, appeared to be a routine bank embezzlement. A trusted teller had walked off with exactly $80,000 of his employer's funds. But underneath the surface was a situation far from routine, which was to develop into one of the most unusual cases ever to be investigated by your FBI. For Earl Kelvin had planned and planned well, both in his entrance to crime and his 80 grand exit.
Me, Earl. Ellie.
Come on in. Anyone followed you?
No one could. I didn't call the bank to tell them you were sick till I was safely out of town.
All right, good. Let me take your thing.
Hey, place isn't bad.
I told you you'd like it. You also like the people. They're a lot more friendly than back east. Well, sit down, I'll fix your drink. Scotch?
You better fill me in first. This is all going too fast for little Ellie.
Okay. You ask the questions, I'll answer.
All right, what's her name?
Johnson. Mr. and Mrs. Edward Johnson.
Occupation?
A salesman. I think I look most like a salesman, don't you? Here you are.
I don't know if you look most like a salesman, but you sure don't look like Earl Kelvin.
Well, that's good enough.
Matter of fact, I like you better like this. What about the money?
Drink up and I'll show you.
No, I don't mean that. Ma said you left $5,000 with her.
She's right, I did.
Why?
All part of the plan, Ellie. When the police see what series those bills are, they'll think they have a lead on the rest.
And they won't.
They sure won't. If Ma plays her hand right.
Don't you worry about Ma.
I made sure that $5,000 was entirely different. And that'll be Mitch. I've been expecting his call. Hello.
Hello, Ed Johnson.
Yeah, speaking. Did you get that speech I sent?
I got it.
All right, read it back, will you? I want my wife to hear how it sounds. Ellie. All right, go ahead.
Hello, Ma. This is Earl. I'm just calling quick to let you know Ellie and me arrived today okay, and you shouldn't worry. I can't tell you where we are, and we won't be able to call anymore because the cops may tap your line. Hold on now. Ellie wants to speak.
Okay, Mitch, that's enough. You've got it. You know when to call?
I know. Just leave it to me, Ed. So long, I'll be seeing you.
So long, Mitch. Well?
Earl calls Ma when the cops are there. They trace the call and think you're in Baltimore.
Uh-huh.
You've thought of everything, haven't you?
I've tried to. When you steal $80,000 from a bank, it's always a good idea. Next question?
No more questions. Just show me the loot. Like you always said, Earl, money talks. Immediately
after the Bureau was informed of Earl Kelvin's defection, Agent Reynolds and I were assigned to the case. Ordinarily, our investigation would have begun at the bank, but the first in a series of developments happened so quickly that the immediate locale of our inquiry changed to the rooming house where the missing teller had residence. This development was the discovery of some of the stolen bills in the closet of Kelvin's bedroom. Agent Reynolds and I arrived on the scene shortly thereafter. The doors of the rooming house had been left unlatched.
Up here, gentlemen.
We were directed upstairs to the small suite of rooms Earl Kelvin had occupied. Mr. Ramsey, an executive of the bank, was waiting for us.
How do you do, gentlemen? Which of you did I speak with over the phone?
You spoke with Agent Reynolds, Mr. Ramsey. I'm Howard Stevens.
Mr. Ramsey.
Yes, Albert.
Will you want Mrs. Elson in there?
Send her in.
Yes, sir.
The money's right here in this bag, Mr. Stevens, just the way Mrs. Elson found it.
$5,000.
Almost $5,4,900.
You were able to identify the bills, Mr. Ramsey?
Oh, yes, they're ours, all right.
You say a Mrs. Elson found the money?
Earl Kelvin's mother-in-law. You can talk to her in a minute.
Good.
I only hope you can get more out of her than I did, Mr. Stevens.
Uncooperative?
On the contrary, she's a rather odd woman, as you can see. If anything, she's too...
Mr. Ramsey?
Come right in, Mrs. Elson. Oh,
thank you, young man. Thank you so much, Mr. Ramsey.
Well, but shut that door, will you? Sit down, please, Mrs. Elson.
Oh, I'm much too upset to sit down, really. If you have any more questions to ask me, you just go right ahead. You young men are agents of the FBI, aren't you? The nice officer inside told me.
Mrs. Elson.
Oh, there. Now I gave him away. And after I promised not to. But then I promised Earl not to.
Mrs. Elson.
Yes?
All right with you, Mr. Ramsey?
Well, of course, by all means.
You promised your son-in-law not to give him away?
Yes, sir, I did. And Earl's such a nice boy. I feel real bad about that.
You do?
Well, I should hope so. After all, it isn't every day a boy's thoughtful enough to leave his wife's mother a bundle of money.
The $4,900, you think he deliberately left it?
Oh, I know he did. He only hid it in the closet so Ellie wouldn't find out. Am I talking too much, young man?
Ellie? Who's Ellie?
His wife, my daughter. Real name's Natalie, but she'd scratch your eyes out if you called her that.
It seems you're rather fond of your son-in-law, Mrs. Elson. Why did you give him away?
Why? Oh, I'm fond of my son-in-law, sure, but I'm also a law-abiding citizen. Earl made a mistake, and the good Lord will only help him... Oh, pardon me.
Just 1 minute, Mrs. Elson. Shall I take it, Chief? After Mrs. Elson says hello. Just hello, Mrs. Elson. Then Agent Reynolds will take the receiver.
Well, all right, but I think it's only Mrs. Des Moines. Wednesdays we usually see a showdown.
Go ahead, Mrs. Elson. Answer and then hand it to me.
Hello?
Hello, Ma. This is Earl.
Okay, Mrs. Elson.
I'm just calling quick to let you know Ellie and me arrived okay. You shouldn't worry. I can't tell you where we are. We won't be able to call anymore because the cops may tap your line. You hold on now. Ellie wants to speak to you. Huh? Ellie, any last words you want to say to me, Ma? Ma? Hold it, Ellie. Don't say anything. Hang up.
Hung up?
Uh-huh.
Well, what'd he say?
Not much, Mrs. Elson, but quite enough for us to... operator, this is a federal agent speaking. An out-of-town call just came into this number. I want to have it traced immediately, please.
For all law enforcement agencies, Baltimore, Maryland, and vicinity, be on the lookout for Earl Kelvin. Description follows. This man is wanted for embezzling $80,000 from the Second National Bank.
Hello, this is Marvin Miller with another page from your American Heritage scrapbook. It was in 1854 that Cyrus West Field, a wealthy New York paper manufacturer, came out of voluntary retirement at the age of 35 to fulfill a dream and join the old world and the new with a transatlantic telegraph cable. The cable was to extend 2,300 miles from the coast of Ireland to the Canadian province of Newfoundland. The United States and Great Britain pooled their resources in the effort. The American warship Niagara was converted into a cable layer, and the British contributed and converted their ship, the Agamemnon. The cable used was flimsy by today's standards, just 5/8 of an inch in diameter, and it had to be laid on an ocean floor that was 2.5 miles below the surface. Many heartbreaking failures plagued but did not discourage the effort. And after several unsuccessful attempts, the two ships rendezvoused once again in mid-Atlantic on July 29, 1858. The cables on each ship were spliced together. The intricate paying-out machinery was set in motion. And as the cable began its descent to the ocean floor, the ships set their courses, one east, one west. The Niagara proceeded to Newfoundland without mishap. The Agamemnon was successful, too, after weathering a bad storm and the threatening cavortings of a playful whale. Cyrus Field's dream became a reality. Queen Victoria and President Buchanan exchanged greetings to inaugurate the new cable, which had cut communication time between the two countries from 10 days to only minutes. Man was conquering distance and time. Cyrus Field proved it could be done with a cable that connected half the globe and formed a link in the growth of America through transportation and communication.
And it is believed that Kelvin is hiding out somewhere in the vicinity of Baltimore, Maryland. Yeah, great sleuthing. Those FBIs must be real seven-day wonders. We'll hear the rest. Okay, I got all the additions. Mitch get here yet?
Not yet, but we can expect him any time now.
Uh-huh, well, I just called to read you the news, honey. I'll be home as soon as I finish my shopping.
All right, Ellie. See you then. Bye.
Bye.
So?
You got a kick out of it.
I should think so. What else?
Let's go back to the table.
Sure.
What else? You didn't get here yet.
Oh, I didn't?
But we can expect you any time.
After you. Well, another beer?
No, I'd better start getting back.
Okay, if you say so.
You better start arriving in town.
When?
Tomorrow?
Yeah. Uncle Earl from the station. That's been fun, Ellie.
That goes double.
Kind of too bad it has to end.
Well, the thing goes, all good things have to.
What if they don't?
Oh, now, Mitch, we're not going into all that again.
Why not? You hate Earl's guts. How many times have you told me that? You would have walked out on him years ago if it hadn't been for the job he had. What's stopping you now?
The same reason to stop me then, $80,000.
You're kidding yourself, Ellie. You know Earl. You won't see a dime of that $80. He'll throw the whole caboodle in some small business, a gas station, maybe hardware. You know that.
Maybe I do, but what you're offering's no better.
I'm offering the $80,000. Every dime of it.
What?
With Earl in the lockup, who's next in line? Well?
Turn him in?
Now, don't tell me the thought never entered that pretty mind.
It did, I admit it, but it went right out again.
Why?
Well, you know why. He'd kill me when he got out.
Why you?
Well, only two of us know what he looks like since he changed his face. There'd have to be one of us turn him in, or both.
What if there was another way to turn him in? An airtight way, so he'd never know.
There isn't any.
What if there was? Suppose he paid for something with one of those bank bills, and when the cops picked him up, he had more bills on him.
Not a chance.
Why not?
Because Earl took care of that most thoroughly. The only bills that could be identified were the ones he left with Ma. All 5,000 worth, that's why.
4,900 worth. You're shy a century, Ellie.
What?
4,900. I held out 5 20s. These babies right here. 5 20s. A century. Now, what I was thinking, there's nobody has access to a husband's wallet like a wife. Now, if you were to take, say, four of these 20s and change them for, say, four of Earl's...
Mitch, you louse, you had this idea from the start.
Maybe I did. Maybe Ma talked me into it. Just still didn't answer, Ellie. What if there was an airtight way to turn Earl in?
Stevens, FBI, Washington, confidential. Have apprehended three suspects answering your description, Earl Kelvin. I'm holding them for questioning pending your arrival. Simon Powell, Baltimore Police.
No? No, that's not Kelvin.
You are sure, Mr. Ramsey?
I'm positive.
Okay, take him out, me, and bring in the next. Now, you understand, Mr. Ramsey, he may have altered his appearance considerably, dyed his hair, scarred his face.
I understand that, Inspector.
You'd be amazed the lengths some of these fellows go. Why, pardon me.
Certainly.
That's it, Meehan. Bring him right in. You go ahead, gentlemen. I'll be right with you.
All right, Sergeant. Thank you.
Inspector,
how about this one, Mr. Ramsey?
All right, put him on.
Well, he does look a little like Earl Kelvin.
Wait a minute.
But I'm certain
he isn't. Mr. Stevens.
Yes, Inspector. I'm sorry, Mr. Ramsey.
This may be interesting. One of you fellows had better listen on the extension.
Oh, Dave, would you mind?
Sure thing. This phone here, Inspector?
Either one. The call's from Ohio. Man says he was handed one of the missing bank bills.
Go ahead, please, Mr. Ramsey.
Steve, hold up a minute.
All right, sir. Please continue.
Well, I'm only going to say this once. I don't want to be involved in any trouble. It's just this man, Ed Johnson, came into my store and he paid for something with a $20 bill. I always check big bills at the cash register for possible counterfeits. Well, I checked this one. It matched up with the newspaper information on that Newark bank embezzlement. I kept my mouth shut till this Ed Johnson left the store, and then I called you collect, like the paper said. I'm delivering the $20 bill to our local police, and that's the end of it as far as I'm concerned. I'm a law-abiding citizen. I'm just doing my duty. That's all I got to say. Bye-bye.
Ellie, dear, how are you?
I'm fine, Ma, but Earl isn't.
No?
No, he isn't fine at all. The police just arrested him here in Akron.
Well, that had to happen sooner or later, Ellie. You come on home, and I'll take care of you.
I'm all right, Ma. I want to stay here for a few days in case the police should ask me anything. Mitch will take care of me. Don't worry.
All right, I won't. You just remember what I said. This had to happen sooner or later. It's all for the best, believe me.
I do believe you, Ma. In fact, I don't miss that. Just what you say. This is all for the best.
Go on, she didn't.
She did, Mitch. I'm telling you, in just those words, it's all for the best.
Oh, that Ma, she kills me. Go ahead. What else did she say?
Oh, come on home. I'll take care of you.
And you said, no, thank you, ma'am. Mitch is going to handle that anyway.
How'd you know?
Intuition.
Oh, it is what I said. Stepping into my parlor, said the spider.
Uh-huh.
Switch on the light, will you? I want to go slip into something more comfortable.
Sure. Only make sure it's something black, huh? I mean, after all, there's such a thing as...
Such a thing as what? Mitch, such a thing as...
Go on, Mitch. Tell her.
Earl.
Such a thing as what?
Earl, what are you doing here?
What am I doing? Shouldn't I be asking you that? This is my house.
Well,
I should be here, shouldn't I?
Earl.
Shouldn't I, Ellie?
We thought you were picked up, Earl.
You did?
Yes, Mitch said...
Oh, I can imagine what Mitch said.
Well, anyway, that doesn't matter now, as long as it wasn't so.
But it was so, Millie.
Hmm?
I was picked up. I had a nice long session with the FBI.
And they let you go?
That's right. I told them they had the wrong man, that I wasn't Earl Kelvin. My name was Ed Johnson, and I could prove it.
Oh, Earl.
You're happy for me, huh, Ellie?
Well, what do you think?
You too, Mitch? You're happy?
I'll say I am. Brother, what a scare. Why, I should have known you'd talk out, Earl.
Yeah. You should have.
After all, you can prove it, like you say. Just because they find you with a couple of bills, that don't
mean... Who said anything about bills?
What?
How did you know what they found, Mitch?
Well, I didn't. I only meant...
Mitch didn't know about the 5,000, Earl. He only meant...
Yeah, he can talk, Ellie. Let Mitch say what he means. He's had practice. Haven't you, Mitch?
Earl, if you've got some crazy idea...
I have no crazy idea. I've got the right idea.
What are you saying, Earl?
I'm saying the FBI let me go for one very good reason.
What reason? Earl, what happened?
I'll tell you what happened. Some tipster phoned in that I was carrying stolen bills. I said that wasn't possible. They said it was possible and proved it. And just when they were also going to prove that I was Kelvin, one of their agents spoke up and said I couldn't be.
What?
One of their agents?
A man named Reynolds. He said I couldn't be because he'd heard Kelvin's voice over the phone with Mara Elsom. And it wasn't anything like mine. And then he said something else. Something real interesting. All day he'd been trying to remember where he'd heard this tipster's voice before. Now he knew. It was the same voice as Kelvin's on the phone with Ma. The same voice, Mitch.
Earl.
Put that gun away, Earl.
What are you going to do?
Just what you think. Only first I'm going to find out where you hid my money.
Listen, Earl, you've got it wrong. I didn't know that Mitch...
Ellie.
Tell him the truth, Mitch. Don't drag me into this.
Where's the money, Ellie?
I don't know. Upstairs, where it's always
been.
I've
been upstairs. Don't lie to me.
I'm not lying. I don't know.
Sure you do. Both of you know. I want that money, Mitch. Now, for the last time, where is it? You got 3 counts. 1.
He means it, Mitch.
2.
It's under the front seat of my car.
Okay. That's more like it. Open the door, Ellie. We'll all go out and have a look. Go ahead, Mitch. And don't try anything. Or you never will again. I keep walking up to the car, both of you. I'm
I'm right behind you.
We're right behind you.
All of you stand where you are. We're federal officers. Stand where you are with your hands raised.
I'll take that gun, Kelvin. Come on, let's have it.
You knew all along. It was only a setup.
Sorry for the deception, but we wanted to recover the money. Also, we wanted to find out just whose voice it was.
Come on, Ellie, run for it.
Hold it, hold it.
Keep going.
Keep going,
Ellie.
That was only a warning. The next one's for Keith.
Stand where you are, both of you. Don't move.
All right. I'm not moving. Don't shoot. I'm not moving.
Hello, this is Marvin Miller with another page from your American Heritage scrapbook. Speaking in a broad sense, the American Revolution was not the same thing as the American War of Independence. The war lasted 8 years, but the revolution lasted over a century and a half. It began when the first permanent settlers landed on the shores of America. It has been said that insurrection of thought always precedes insurrection of deed. And over the years, such a change occurred in the thinking of the colonists that the revolution was nearly completed in their minds before the first bullets began to fly. Consider for a moment. The colonies were settled largely by emigrants who were discontented or rebellious in spirit, by people who couldn't adjust to life in the old world, whether socially, politically, economically, or religiously. Some were tired of bowing to their betters. Others wanted a share in government, or a richer portion of the world's goods, or to worship God as they chose. The nightmare crossing of the Atlantic impressed upon their minds that the London government was now far away, 3,000 perilous miles. They had to become self-sufficient to survive in the lonely American wilderness. The dense forests and rugged pioneering conditions changed their patterns of living and their habits of thought. The barbaric crudeness of their surroundings forced them to become independent. As time passed, Americans matured and acquired privileges of self-government enjoyed by no other colonial peoples, further increasing their self-confidence. It was a subtle revolution being wrought within the people themselves. The insurrection of thought was slow, insidious, and irresistible. Insurrection of deed was predestined by the newly developed strength, self-confidence, individualism, and spirit of independence of young America.
With the arrest of Mitch Borton and Natalie Kelvin and the recovery of almost all of the stolen money, the final step was taken quietly when a return visit was made to Mrs. Elsom at the rooming house in Newark. Together with Earl Kelvin, all four were quickly tried and convicted, their subsequent varied sentences closing the 80 grand exit.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.